Tableau 14. Molly Maguire's. The end justifies the means. Three miners emerging from the opening of a hillside that resembles a mine entrance. All are dragging tools of mining, shovels, picks, blasting caps, lunch pails, lanterns, and all are black with soot, dust, and smoke. They emerge, covered in smoke and dust, from the small mine shaft of Miller, Gregg and Company, in a hillside in Hummelstown, Pennsylvania. They are quiet, stunned beyond speech. Each man suspects that the events of the last few moments are no natural disaster or accident. They seem to be a preconceived, well-thought-out, well-supplied sabotage. Each workman wonders, is either one of my friends, soaked in sweat and bruised by falling rock, the cause of this disaster? Is he a saboteur, a Molly Maguire? Each wonders how far the other is capable of going, and how far he himself is capable of going. Password 1. Sandy Turnbull, the youngest of the three men, has been a miner for less than 6 months. He's only 17 years old. His wife, Margaret, is only 16. They live in a company house, which they have just furnished comfortably with new furniture from the country store. A kitchen table and four chairs, bedroom set, couch, and two living room chairs were the major purchases. But then they added pots, pans, dishes, silverware, among other items. The bill came to over $500. Sandy wasn't worried at that time. But what Margaret doesn't know is that over half his earnings each week go to pay off that debt. The company store charges him 20% interest. That's highway robbery. But because he is paid in company scrip rather than currency, he can't spend it anywhere else. Sandy hasn't told Margaret about the interest and financial problems because she's been so sick lately. You see, she's pregnant with their first child. He'll have to add a crib to the long list of furniture he'll have to continue to work and pay for. He'll have to figure out how to pay the company doctor for his services, too. Just today, the company again lowered the price per ton, and Sandy wonders how to avoid his mounting debt. Robert Williams, his wife, three children, and his invalid father all live in a company house. In fact, all the workers do. It's required. You rent from the company or you don't work for them. Simple fact. Robert is older than Sandy. Fortunately, he started his married life with some hand-me-down furniture from his parents. Robbie, the oldest child, also works in the mine. Yes, the boy is only 9, but he can hold a candle and carry supplies, like blasting caps and sticks of dynamite, back and forth from the storage bin for the men in the earth below. It's dangerous work, and plenty of young lads have lost an arm from carelessness. But Robert knows that young Robbie is a cautious boy. Can't live your life in fear now, can you? Expect the worst and hope for the best, believes Robert. Password A. Actually, Robert is more concerned about his dad, one of the men who were fortunate enough to avoid accidents in the mines. After 15 years, though, a constant cough racks his body night and day. The company doctor said it's probably the black lung, and there's nothing to be done for it. With no pension or disability insurance provided by the company, there are no alternatives but to take care of poor Dad until the end of his days. So Robert's wife, Libby, does what she can to keep him comfortable while taking care of the house and children, too. Robert considers how much he gives to the company and wonders when will be payback time. Herbert Smith is the last of the group. He lives alone now. At one time, he had a family, a wife, Polly, a beautiful daughter, Pauline, and a baby boy named Ned. He rarely chronicles his story, and most people just don't ask because he is such an irritable old man. Working for over 20 years in the mines has taken its toll on him physically, emotionally, and mentally. He keeps to himself. Oh yes, he'll speak when spoken to, but he never initiates a conversation or volunteers information. Some think he's odd, but his story explains it all. Pauline had just turned 15 years old when a new supervisor came to the mine. Living alone in the supervisor's shack, he had conveniences that the common laborers didn't have, like an icebox. One day in the heat of summer, Ned took ill. No one could figure out what ailed him, not even the doctor. But he sent Pauline over to the supervisor's shack for some ice to help cool the boy's temperature. She quickly did as she was told. Unfortunately, the beautiful young girl caught the supervisor's eye. He gave her the ice and told her to come back after dark for more. Unsuspecting of manly wiles and trying to help her brother, she did. Her body was found the next day. Young Ned also died during that fateful night. The Pennsylvania Cossacks, as the company police were called, came to investigate. Within a week, the suspected supervisor was found guiltless and continued at work. Herbert, though, broken, tormented, began drinking. Several months later, Polly moved away. The old coal miner cared little. His life destroyed, waiting only for God to take him, so it seems. You see, each of these three men has a reason, no, many reasons, to want retribution. How much more will the Mellons and Morgans take from their workers? They believe that the end justifies the means. The mine owners are rich, powerful men who keep adding to their wealth from those who are willing to trade their sweat, family, and broken body for a small token. Some workers call to arms, unite, organize. Many have tried to join the fledgling United Mine Workers, but with the first wind of the union organizers, mines are shut down, employees are released, blacklisted, and finally evicted. Many of the innocent families are targeted and suffer the wrath of the owners. It seems like open warfare between the union organizers and owners, with the scabs in the middle. Poor scabs work for any price. Many are immigrants, ignorant, unable to communicate in English, and are destitute. Desperate means are sought. Conditions have not gone unnoticed. Those minds that won't allow unions will sit up and take notice as soon as the fanatical solutions start to emerge. With secret handshakes, passwords, and coded messages, the Molly Maguires attempt to reform the mine industry in their own way. Some believe they began with an Irish cell of workers in anthracite country in northeastern Pennsylvania. Their plight of being overworked, underpaid, and trapped in dangerous jobs deep beneath the earth has led them to mine sabotage in retaliation against their hopeless situation. At first, the sabotage comes in the form of broken or lost tools. Then they become more serious. Supervisor shacks mysteriously burn down. Fires erupt in the bowels of the earth, causing cave-ins. The disciplinary measures become increasingly more drastic until they end in mine catastrophes, which shut mines and bankrupt mine owners. Rarely are the culprits caught. No one is punished. The Molly Maguires don't see the destruction as extreme. They see it as progressive and attention-getting. their consciences are not seared when co-workers are maimed or killed. The Molly Maguires have been indoctrinated to believe that it is for the greater good. The Mollies are a slick bunch. Their escapades are well planned and executed. Even the Pinkertons, the despised detectives, spies, and thugs hired by the owners of the company, have little success in locating the culprits. In our group of three seen here, each could be a Maguire, each could be a Molly. Each could easily justify a drastic measure in his own mind, and to others who understand about the working condition in the mines and the living conditions in a company town. Each could present himself on Judgment Day with a clear conscience for extreme action taken. But which one truly believes that the end justifies the means? Molly Maguire's The End Justifies the Means. Password 6. Historical Notes and Teaching Tips. Little is known concerning the organization of the Molly Maguires, as they were a highly secretive group whose purpose was to sabotage the profitable coal mining industry during the 1870s. Their activities are so mysterious that it is difficult to determine what acts the Mollies ought to be credited with. One aspect is beyond reproach. This small, dispersed group instilled terror on the mine owners and mine workers alike in the anthracite regions of northeastern Pennsylvania for nearly 20 years. The mine owners employed secret agents called the Pinkertons to conduct counterinsurgency tactics that resulted in as much violence and mayhem as the Mollies. Workers and owners seemed to be on the threshold of all-out war. In some cases,